From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We are a little late on PDGA Radio this week, but it is worth the wait. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. It's weird to be recording on a Thursday, but here we are. I'll totally take the heat for that. I was traveling for work, and we actually, it's kind of fun. I'm not really into doing forced team activities, but we did an escape room, and a couple months ago, we all did it as a team and did not get out, and so we were very competitive and actually got out this time, and they gave us a bonus room to do and got out of that one as well, so I was pretty psyched. But I was doing that instead of the podcast. I apologize.
Well, I mean, I could have. We did have an originally scheduled Monday morning, but I was wiped after Vegas, so it's all good, and it gives us time to, you know, process everything. So we will talk about Vegas. We will talk about the Memorial. We're going to talk to Calvin Heimberg, who was the winner of the Las Vegas Challenge on the men's side. We are not talking to Paige Bierkus this week, but man, she had a stellar performance. So we're going to just kind of break down all that. And Sarah and I are probably, since the kind of the cool part right now, as we're recording the live coverage of the Disc Golf Pro Tour Memorial Championship is going on. So Sarah and I might go. We might go live commentator style here. We're going to give it our best Nate and Val, except for not married.
Yes.
Hopefully,
not married.
Hopefully we can knock it out of the park. So anyway, let's talk
Vegas.
Well,
it's exciting. Cause, I mean, we'll see. Cause I may just like burst into, oh my God, or something like that. Cause I'm watching it on one of my screens and, you know, there's big putts and giant drives being made. So
here's the thing I will say. The remote commentary is nice from a quality standpoint, but having been literally on the course this weekend when Paige Bierkus made her final putt, you can't beat that same kind of feeling
energy
of being on the course. Yeah, like you're not going to get that in a remote commentary style. At least I don't think.
Definitely,
but man.
Yeah. So I was
let's
on
talk
a course.
About that first. We should talk about that. Were you watching?
Yeah, so I was on a course. I was playing doubles with a group of friends of mine in Nashville. And I was like, oh, yeah, the final round's happening right now. So we were looking at UDisc, but then I saw that you went live from the PDGA's Facebook account. And I tuned in, and we were like, oh, my gosh, a playoff! And we were all psyched and looking at the scores. And then we tuned back in after all of us drove on the final hole of the course and saw the big jump putt, and all of us just went bonkers. It was awesome.
It was baller. Like it was one of those. I feel very fortunate in the past few years. I've seen some really, really excellent moments in disc golf that I can think of, like 2016 Worlds when Val Jenkins like ran the island. This was after like she had come back essentially because Paige Pierce went out of bounds a bunch of times and Val was right there and she bam went for the island even though she hadn't the whole time like that. Eagle McMahon going for that same island at GBO last year.
Yep.
And then like this, like, like three like goosebumps inducing moments. Like it was, I walked up to that hole and I didn't think, and this is probably why I'm not Paige Bierkus and why I'm not a professional disc golfer, right? Like I walk up to that hole and I'm like, all right, cat's out. And then she lays up. And so she's got an easy three.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, the way Paige has been playing the whole round, the way she's putted recently, like this one is not a lock. And so maybe she just takes it easy, lays up because you have the potential where this one could roll away being a hillside green. Whereas you go to hole three, which was the next one on the playoff, and maybe you just try and park it.
Yeah. And wait, so that was hole one, correct?
Yeah, it was hole one.
Okay, hole one, right.
And so she totally proved me wrong. I didn't think she was going to run it. And so she ran it, and I mean, the running toward the basket before it was even in the chains was such an awesome, awesome moment. Like she absolutely deserved that win. And it was cool to see. Cause like earlier in the week, she was really, really down on herself. After every round, like she was a potato, right? How great was that interview?
I know. I was like, I like potatoes. Like that would not, I don't know. I think I would definitely pick another food to describe myself or something, some other object to describe myself.
I mean, I get what she was going for.
I got like a couch potato or
she's like, yeah.
I gotcha.
But like, and I think that, so the day before that we wanted to interview her cause we were doing all these like post round interviews on camera and stuff like that. And I called her up and didn't get an answer. And then she called me back and I was like, hey, where are you? And she's like, I'm in my van crying. And I'm like,
oh my gosh,
come on. I was like, first of all, you can just text me or something. Like, but she was really down on herself for most of the tournament because I think she's putting a lot of pressure on herself. She was putting really poorly early on. And so for her to go into that round with four shots, you know, being four shots down, get them all back, basically give them away again and still rally back for the win was just, it was huge. It was really, really big moment for her.
Yeah. I was saying to you before we started airing I wouldn't use the word shock necessarily when it comes to her winning worlds. Like, I always knew that she was potentially in contention, and I've known her for years before she even went on tour and knew that she was an outstanding player. Though. But it was, a little bit unexpected. But I feel like I had sort of that same feeling around this event, because you and I, looking at our picks, we didn't even pick her. Let's see. Yeah, we didn't even pick her for top five or winner. So that was surprising to me that neither of us picked her.
Yeah.
For even top five. But B, I mean, there's just so many good players. Like, you've got Paige Pierce, you've got Katrina Allen, you have Jennifer Allen, who's the longest thrower in the FPO division. And she did really well, but, has a little bit of issues on the putting green still.
Right.
So just to come out again after her showing at Worlds and to win the first NT of the year was like just a really, really awesome surprise, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, look,
not to discount her at all.
No. And I think she even went into it thinking that she needed to prove something. And then I think that's kind of why she was disappointed early on. And then she comes back and she wins it in such an authoritative fashion. And so I think really the next step now for her is, like, obviously she's arrived, and that was really cool. And she even was talking about how she kind of felt that way after the tournament. Like, this proved that she made the right decision, that she should be out on tour, that she can hang with the rest of the women's field. Now, what I'm curious to see is, how does she respond at Memorial? You know, like, last year was the end of the year, a lot of emotions. You can understand why after Worlds she maybe didn't play as well, but now I mean, you could probably give her Memorial, but do you give her many more tournaments than that? Like, that's the interesting part, is how does she respond to this victory? That's what I'm excited to see. And same thing with Calvin. I mean, we should talk about Calvin too, in terms of he dang near gave that thing away on Sunday.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, it was he came out and looked like a completely different player for the first 5, 6, 7, 8 holes.
And that's the hardest thing about this sport and other mentally grueling sports like this, is you're your biggest downfall.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those two players and so many other players have the skill to win every event. But mentally, you could shoot yourself in the foot mentally before you even step on the course. And that, for me, to be able to overcome that. And how old is Calvin? Like
23.
20? Okay, so he's a little bit older than age.
Yeah,
but older. to be able to overcome that at such a young age is really impressive to me. And of course, having the support of his friends there caddying. And I've talked about that before. For me, I like, when I'm in a high pressure situation, I like having a caddy, and it's not even about carrying my bag. Like, I can carry my own bag. It's about keeping my mind in a good place.
Right.
And that's exactly what seemed like happened with him.
It's funny. And we'll hear from him a little more on that in the interview. But yeah, I mean, to me, that was the major turning point of the round was Madison jumping on the bag, and he didn't want her to. I talked to her afterwards.
Oh, really?
And she basically steamrolled him and was like, look here, dude.
No.
Except for she didn't use those words. She was basically like, hey man, I'm caddying for you.
Yeah.
And
I'm doing
hopefully
this.
Maybe Calvin gave her a little cut of that, I hope, because
I hope he bought her dinner or something, or ice cream.
Yeah. I'm sure. I'm sure. Well, I don't know. Let's do this. Let's go to our interview with Calvin. I think that's a good segue. And then we can come back and kind of talk about other performances. I don't want to belabor things too much. Like, there's still the memorial to get to this week. But let's talk with Calvin Heimberg, and then we'll come back for some more here on PDGA Radio. All right, joining us now on PDGA Radio, we have Las Vegas Challenge champion Calvin Heimberg after a pretty tremendous weekend. Calvin, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. I know when I talked to you after the final hole at Vegas, you said you were still processing things, processing the win, everything like that. You've had a couple days now. How's it feel? Have you processed it yet?
Yeah, I guess. Definitely kind of come down off of all the emotions, I guess. But yeah, I'm super, super stoked that I was able to pull it out there at the end. And yeah, I mean, it was just a crazy ending. A lot of stuff was going on there.
Well, yeah, man. I mean, I guess one thing, now that you've thought back to it, did you ever really feel, I mean, did you feel in the moment like it was getting away from you?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely felt like it was getting away from me right there at really the first four holes. I mean, and then kind of the rest of that front nine. I mean, it was always kind of slipping away. And yeah, I mean, that was pretty evident when I checked the scores after the front nine and saw that there were a bunch of people charging from second and third card, and Dustin was sitting right there, and so was Josh, and even Paul was still in the mix there at that point.
So, I mean, what goes on in your mind at that point? Like, take me back to that time when you checked those scores. What do you say to yourself to turn that around? I mean, you made a huge, I mean, the switch was flipped. What are you telling yourself in that moment?
Yeah, you're just telling yourself, I mean, you're trying to do anything you can to change anything possible at that point. I mean, I was taking off jackets and just, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there was anything in particular that I personally told myself, but, yeah, I mean, I got a text message from Zach Melton, just kept it a little more lively. And, yeah, I think that probably changed my mood around a little bit and probably kickstarted my, the better half of my round.
I was going to say, he told you to put the pizza in the oven, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It kind of works. I tried that while I was out playing today, and I made a couple more putts than usual. I didn't make as many putts as, you're making, but.
Whatever works. I don't know. I like saying it.
What's your favorite kind of pizza then?
Ooh. I like pizza with everything on it. So I guess like your supreme pizzas or whatever they call them.
Okay. Okay. We ask the real hard hitting questions on mm-hmm. this show.
Yeah.
This is what the people come for. What's that? Go ahead.
That's good. I'm glad they come to find out our pizza preferences.
You know what? Hey, maybe someone will order you a pizza and have it delivered to you.
All right. Well, maybe if I can figure out the address here, actually, you know what? This is probably airing at a later date. I don't know where I'll be. So
that's okay. We'll just have him. We'll have him send it to you at like hole 18 at Fountain Hills. They can just address it to you that way, and we'll be good to go.
That's good.
I like it, man. I like it. So, what have the last couple of days been like for you? I mean, was there a celebration? Did you get to, have you really gotten to enjoy the win yet? Or is it pretty much just back to work?
It's pretty much been back to work. Yeah, with a 3-day turnaround for another big tournament and courses that I really don't know. I've put in a bunch of practice rounds to learn the courses and feeling pretty good about both the courses at this point.
I mean, what's the outlook for you for the Memorial? Do you feel any higher expectations or pressure now, or is it almost like, I don't know, like, how is it hard not to come down, I guess, from such a big win? You know what I mean?
Yeah, my expectations for myself as in someone just showed me a message that was distracting. Apparently ice cream's out downstairs. But anyways,
oh, man, we should cut this short.
No, it's all good. But expectations for me personally, I don't think my expectations have changed for this event. I'm still just trying to go out there and put together some rounds that I feel good with. Same kind of with Las Vegas. And I don't think my expectations have changed. Maybe other people's expectations for me have changed now that they've seen me pull off a big win. But I don't think my expectations have changed at all.
How do you keep such an even keel? Have you always been like this? Is this a born and raised kind of thing? Like you don't seem like you can be shaken very easily.
Yeah, I feel like I've always kind of been like this, but I don't know if it's a born and raised thing. I don't really think either of my parents are quite this way, but yeah, I feel like I've always kind of been this way. So
it seems like this kind of demeanor would translate well to other sports. Did you grow up playing any other sports?
Nothing really through high school. I mean, just a bunch of stuff up through, you know, middle school and then a little basketball beyond then, but that's about it.
Okay. So like at what point made you, you know, when you said, how old were you when you actually started playing disc golf?
11 or 12.
Oh, okay. So it's been a while. Okay. So,
yeah.
I mean, at what point, and I heard you say on Smashbox the other night, was your grandparents got you a starter pack, right?
Yep.
Yep. Do you still have any of those discs?
No, those are long gone. Long gone. Somewhere in the water, or maybe someone else is throwing them at this point. Who knows?
At what point did something click in you to where you were like, all right, I'm actually pretty good at this?
It was a slow and gradual, you know, ascent to being good. It was nothing like super quick, I don't feel like, because I mean, I started at as like a 900 rated player. I think my first rating was just above 900. And then I think it dropped into the 800s after that at some point. But it wasn't until I was probably around like 980. And I was playing open, but not accepting cash so that I could play Am Worlds, when I thought, you know, I was kind of good, I guess. But even at that point, you know, you still are getting whooped by all your local pros. So,
and then you've got, I know you said it's been a slow and gradual ascent, but over the last 13 months, your rating has gone up 26 points. That's not exactly slow and gradual, man.
Yeah, it is definitely not. I played very well over the last few months of the season in Florida. Hall of Fame Classic. I played well above my rating. I think that was the last Hall of Fame Classic. I did not play very well, but once I got home, I started to play a lot better, for whatever reason that may be. I don't know.
I was gonna say you can't really put a finger on it. It's just something's kind of shifted.
Yeah, I mean, probably something to do with being able to be home, you know, not always traveling. You get to put in a little more practice. It's a little less time spent on the road. And being able to do that allowed me to, elevate certain little aspects of my game and kind of bring my scores down a little bit.
Tell me about the Heimborg, nickname. I mean, obviously it can come kind of easily, I'm sure, but who was the first one to call you that? Do you know?
I think Crazy John Brooks.
Okay.
On a live stream at second round Pittsburgh Worlds.
Okay.
I think that's where that came from. I think he actually thought that was my last name, and he was calling me Heimborg on the live stream.
So it wasn't even like a, it wasn't like a, hey, this guy's like really good and playing like a robot, like in terms of just being able to like destroy things. It was literally, he just fouled up your name.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it. He just messed my name up.
That's maybe one of my favorite stories I've heard recently. I love that. And you, I know that's like your Twitter handle, or I mean your Instagram handle, right? But you, I don't, you, do you do anything on Instagram?
No, no, I'm not active really on Instagram, even though I probably should be. I got baited into my one post ever. So that's why I have one post. Jeremy Pauling baited it out of me.
Okay. I mean, do you feel, yeah, I mean, what's it like? You're fairly young though. Like social media is like kind of what people your age do, but do you feel like you kind of have to start doing it now to, you know, like amp your profile or you build yourself up at all? I don't know. Like, do you feel a responsibility there, or are you just kind of like, whatever, I'm going to play and I'll be fine?
I definitely feel like I should be spending more time and putting out more social media content, and I hopefully will motivate myself to do it. But is there like a true desire right now to do it? No. But hopefully, you know, I can motivate myself and give the people what they want, because in a way it is kind of my job. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's not only just competing at these events, it's also reaching out to the disc golf community and letting them know who I am, and hopefully increasing, you know, the popularity of Calvin Heimborg as a brand.
I mean, let's say tomorrow you decided, all right, today's the day, I'm gonna become like that social media person, and I'm gonna become Eagle McMahon and put the camera in my face all day. What would people see out of you? Would there be anything unexpected, or, you know, what would they get?
Yeah, they'd probably see me trash talking with my close friends, and you probably don't necessarily expect that, but yeah, a lot of trash talk. That's probably what they would see that they wouldn't expect.
Is that like you and like Zach and Madison and people like that?
Yep.
Madison told me she had some choice words for you that you at first didn't want her to caddy. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm kind of anti-caddy. I like to be able to carry my bag and kind of get off to the side on my own if I need to. So, and plus, you know, sometimes caddies get distracted and you have to track them down.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm kind of anti-caddy. But, yeah, then she said she was going to get thrown into the crowd if she wasn't carrying some of my stuff. So I guess she carried all of it.
She guilted you.
Yep. Kind of, in a way, I guess.
That's a strong strategy from Madison. That doesn't surprise me. She's crafty like that. Mm-hmm. What's your best disc golf smack talk? Is it situational, or do you have like a go-to that you can use on somebody?
I think it's all situational. The best smack talk is definitely situational. I don't think there's a go-to, but there is a thing that they do back in Florida. They snake bite people. You can see me, but they'll give you a couple of snake bites, and it has pretty good effectiveness on affecting the targeted player, messing them up.
Okay. Speaking of Florida, that's actually a good segue to one of my questions. Like, obviously, I think Florida, I think, you know, Johnny McRae, Ken Climo, everything like that. There's been a long history of really strong players from Florida. Do you have a particular disc golfer, maybe from Florida or otherwise, that you see as like your idol in the sport?
My idol from, I mean, I guess Kenny. I mean, he's from the same area as me, the Clearwater area. So, I mean, as I became more involved with the sport, I started to realize that, you know, one of the best players ever, or the player with the best resume ever, is right in our local area. So I started, you know, trying to watch as much of him as I could, even though that footage is kind of limited from back in the day. But yeah, Kenny would probably be that guy. But I've probably played more with Johnny and got to see how, you know, I kind of learned how to win and stuff just watching Johnny. And then once, you know, he was done just beating up on us and he left for tour, I got the opportunity to kind of take that step and learn how to win, you know, against slightly easier competition.
That's cool. Did you hear from any of those guys after this week?
I didn't get any like personal messages, but I definitely got some comments on some Facebook posts. I think Ken Climo actually made a post on our club page talking about my back nine, but yeah, nothing like directly personal, like through like a messenger or a message or anything. But yeah.
Do you have a solid turbo putt?
No, I don't. I'm okay at an upside down turbo putt, but a normal turbo putt, I'm useless.
All right, man. Well, hey, what I like to do with people who it's kind of their first time on the show is I like to leave with what I call the lightning round. I'm just going to hit you with a bunch of quick questions, and I want you to just give me the first thing that pops into your head if you can.
All right.
This way people can get to know Calvin Heimberg a little bit more. Does that sound good?
All right. We'll see if we can handle this.
All right, let's go. So first one, and I know a lot of the, I will caveat this, but a lot of these are on tour questions. I know you haven't been fully on tour all the time, but you've seen some things. So what's your favorite course on tour?
Maple Hill.
Okay. Most difficult course on tour?
Idlewild.
Ooh, all right. Favorite food when you're out on the road?
Chick-fil-A.
Okay. Favorite sport either to play or watch besides disc golf?
Basketball.
Okay. Do you have a team or you just like to play?
I don't have a team.
Okay. Pick a superpower if you had to have one.
Flight.
Okay. What would you be doing if you weren't a disc golfer?
I'd be stuck in a cubicle being an engineer.
All right, one person you'd want to have dinner with, dead or alive?
Oh man, I don't even know. Dead or alive?
Stumped.
We'll go with I don't know. That's a tough one.
Come back to it.
Sure. I don't have a good answer for that one.
That's okay. We'll come back to it. You're on a cross country drive and you're hungry. You just need a snack though, not like Chick-fil-A. What's your best snack for when you're cruising in the car?
Recently I've had just a container of nuts.
Okay. You're trapped on a desert island and you can only watch one movie for the rest of your life. What's it going to be?
Lion King.
Really?
Yep.
Give me some Lion King. All right, man. And then the last one, cats or dogs?
I've never had a dog, so I guess cat.
Cat. All right. It goes off the Lion King thing. All right.
Yep. I guess so. Never thought about it that way.
Did you come up with someone to have dinner with yet?
No, I really don't even know. I don't know who I'd want to talk to, dead or alive.
Who do you go eat dinner with now?
What do you mean by now?
I mean, like when you're cruising, traveling on the road, who do you eat with the most?
Probably Zach Mountain.
Okay, you get enough of him, I bet, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's
good. He's good to talk to. He's good people.
He is good people. He's actually right over there right now.
I'm surprised I can't see like the reflection of his sunglasses flaring off the door behind you. There he is.
Yeah, there he is.
Hey, Zach. Yep. I love it, man. I love it. Well, hey, thanks, Calvin. I appreciate you coming on. from my perspective, it was a lot of fun to watch last weekend. I know people are excited to see some new blood coming in and kind of taking the game by storm. So from my perspective, it's exciting. I hope it's as exciting for you.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to get out there this year.
Awesome, man.
Hopefully I can, maybe take down another couple tournaments. We'll see.
All right. Well, good luck. That was Calvin Heimberg. We'll be back in just a moment here on PDGA Radio. All right, so Calvin Heimberg and Paige Bierkus were obviously the big stories, but there were some other really good, strong performances out in Vegas, and I think one of them is Vanessa Van Dyken coming in third place. Number one, fairly impressive because she has a new sponsor this year. She's throwing Discraft stuff, so that was a big change for her. And then number two, final round, 1,001 rated.
Huge
performance from her to kind of jump up the leaderboard. I know we haven't really gotten to see much of the coverage yet because she was being recorded by Terry Miller. We had some of her highlights on our round recaps and everything, but just looking at the UDisc stats, the biggest difference, you look at her second round at the end of a course, she had two double bogeys, three bogeys, and three OB strokes. Closed out bogey, bogey, par, bogey. Round four at the end of a course, no bogeys, no double bogeys, closed out with 10 straight pars.
Yeah.
Eight straight pars, and she went 500 par. Just a huge, huge performance for her. Her scrambling really, I think, was her biggest, the biggest thing she did the whole tournament. Like she's not lighting the world on fire, putting herself, parked for different shots. She was seventh place in circle two in regulation and circle one in regulation. Yeah. But really her biggest thing is she didn't let the big numbers roll up, I think.
And I think it's important to note on a course like this. So when I think of scrambling, I think of getting out of the woods. Cause that's right. I mostly play on woods courses and I'm like, oh no, I have 200 trees around me and I don't know how I'm going to get out. But scrambling on a course like this is you're off the fairway. I mean, what is off the fairway really, unless you're out of bounds on a big course?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it's all subjective still.
Yeah. But maybe you're not in a ideal location. And she's, I've been playing with her for years and she's always been really consistent at her approach shots. So if that's what scrambling equates to on a course like this, then I'm not surprised that she did so well at that. Maybe she was offline on her drive or not in a place that she wanted to be, but then put her second or third shot under the basket.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's clearly she's good at that. I'm bummed I didn't get to talk to her more while she was there. I saw her at Starbucks a couple mornings.
Nice.
And she was really good, dude. Oh yeah. Okay. So the Starbucks across the street from the Wild Horse Golf Club is the place to be.
Really?
I would so basically what I would do is because I was working with Sean and then Todd Lyon, our new events guy, who was awesome. We would all go over the course together at 6:30 in the morning, but I would drop them off because I was doing the new podcast at night and then writing articles and just wasn't done with work yet. And so I would go over to the Starbucks for a couple hours and finish my work because it's just easier there than at the venue and being all distracted and everything. So I would go hang out there and it was a rotating group of players coming through. It was kind of fun. Double G and Jessica Weiss would come in every morning before her round. I saw Vanessa a couple times, Paige Pierce a couple times, Kale Leviska almost every morning.
Nice. That's so it was just interesting to me.
It
because
was cool.
Actually, I saw Jessica. I ran into Jessica Weiss and Double G at Starbucks before Idlewild. I thought that was hilarious. But
hey, Starbucks,
that's really funny
to
me. I'm drinking coffee right now, and I'm one of those people that craves coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
But I do not, if I'm going to play a competitive round of disc golf, I do not drink coffee. Because for me, I drink coffee to get an extra edge for when I'm going to start my day or start work.
So make you jittery?
Yeah. Yeah. I drank coffee before I played a casual round this past weekend and I was not myself. I was just oh my God, I can't even focus on my putts. And I was just,
oh geez. See, I have to have it to function. I go running, when I go running in the morning, if I don't have coffee first, I physically can feel a difference.
Whoa.
It's crazy. I'm very and much I'm not dependent like, on coffee.
Yeah. I don't, I'm lucky that I'm not so dependent on coffee that I don't get a headache if I don't have
it. I definitely do. Yeah. If it's like 10 o'clock and like I haven't had coffee yet, headache city. But it was just a cool little spot to be. Like, so I got to talk to Kale a few times, and he was another player I wanted to bring up, third place.
He did great.
And it was cool talking to him. Like every morning we would kind of chat about how the round before it had gone. And like one day he was going to leave the Starbucks and go over to another course nearby and just putt like in solitude, just to work on his own stuff without distractions. But the really interesting part in talking to him was like, man, there's been all this off-season chatter about like my new teammate Kevin Jones, and this, he wasn't knocking Kevin Jones by any stretch of the imagination. He's super stoked to have like Kevin and Seppo. He knows that their team is very strong.
Yeah.
But he was kind of like, you know, everyone's talking about all these off-season moves, and like I'm still here, man. Like, you know, he was kind of coming out similar to Paige Bierkus, maybe not quite as big, but with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, trying to prove that he could still hang. And
yeah,
and he can, man. He's super fun to watch. Like, and he's just so really
smooth.
Good. Exactly. He's super smooth and super accurate. Like he's not throwing like 500 feet or 550 feet like some of these guys, but at this event, that's the thing. Like it's a little bit deceiving. Like you think, oh man, Eagle Man throws real far and this is a long course. You're fine. But I mean, you have Kale Aviska and Josh Anthon both tying for third. Neither of those guys are known for being super long throwers. Even, you know, out of like the rest of the top five, Eagle, Kevin Jones, Calvin Heimberg is probably the shortest arm of those other three guys. Yeah. Not that he can't bomb. I mean, he throws super far. But it was just, it's, you know, this isn't the kind of venue. Nate Sexton, top 10, you know. Andrew Presnell, top 10. These aren't guys who are all super far throwing. Now, there are plenty of people who are successful who throw far. But what I'm basically trying to say is it's not a requirement at this course when you think that it is.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the argument, is we've seen a shift over the past few years of going toward more golf, traditional golf courses.
Right.
And I've heard a lot of negative feedback about it. Like, oh, we like the woods. We like to be able to shape shots and blah, blah, blah. You know, you could throw a 500 foot shot and get there and it doesn't take any extra skill. It's like, yeah, when the course is designed correctly, it does require accuracy. At least for me, it's a lot easier for me to do approach shots or try to park a hole if there are trees or things that I need to throw around, because of just reading the depth perception. Basically, I'm like, okay, so that tree looks about 200 feet, therefore I need to throw this far. But when there's nothing there, it plays with me a little bit, because you're like, wow, I have this giant landing zone.
Well, right. And I remember I've talked with James Conrad about that, because he can go out there and he can throw just as far as any of these guys, but when there's not like a visual cue, like a line for him to shape, he doesn't do as well. And you see that, like he came in what? He was down in the 20s or 30s, I think, this week.
Well, and then, on top of that, this course too, obviously there's tons of bunkers. There's tons of OB greens. Rows and cart paths and greens. Yeah. Lots of different things that get in the way of that.
I think the biggest thing with these venues, with these courses, was the ground play and just how fast everything was. You really had to control your landing speed and your skip. And that was, that's why you had a lot of people rolling OB or flaring OB.
Oh, plus water. We didn't even talk about, I mean,
there was some water. There wasn't a ton, but there's enough. There's enough.
Well, there's
to be
that
scary.
that little island hole that was like, what, 250 feet, a little bit downhill.
Yeah, that hole six. Yeah.
Yeah. And was it the third or the fourth round? I forget which course that's on, but none of the lead card women were safe. They all had to throw from the drop zone because they lost confidence or just weren't, I don't know, disc selection or.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I saw most people just kind of run at it. But if you run at it and go long, there's not a lot of room on the backside of the green. Even like you're not OB in the water, but you're OB by the rope.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. Like this is another one of those, I kind of chalk up Vegas to another one of those places like Emporia. the glass blown open. I will be the first to admit, before I actually went to Emporia and saw it in person, I didn't like watching it on coverage. I thought it was boring. I thought it was the same shot over and over again.
You mean the Country and Club course?
The Country Club, yeah.
Okay.
The Country Club. Country Club specifically, sorry.
Yeah.
But then you get there and there is more nuance in person. There's a lot more rolling elevation there than you think. The lines are a little tighter than you think. And like, that's a really hard thing, I realized, to translate onto video. So I can see why people might watch video of Vegas and be like, man, this is boring. These guys are all throwing the same hyzer shots and stuff. But there's a lot more at play there. I mean, it'd be nice if it were a little greener for sure. But yeah. It is the desert in wintertime. You don't get green regardless unless you're just massively watering it. But I think this is another one of those kind of courses where you kind of have to see it in person to really appreciate what you're up against.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the elevation change definitely, it didn't look.
Elevation change never comes across on video, man. It just doesn't. I don't know why. Who else we want to talk about? Let's talk about Dustin Keegan.
Yeah.
That dude likes Las Vegas.
He just celebrated a birthday a couple days. Happy birthday.
Right. Happy birthday, Dustin. So he shot his career high hot round.
Yeah, what was that like?
But he did it last year in Vegas. He shot a 1075 last year in Vegas, second round. That was his career high.
Yeah.
He bested that this year.
1084.
1084, 12 birdies in a row.
Oh my God.
Or something. Or no, not. Was it 12 birdies in a row at the end? Yeah, 12 birdies in a row to close out round three. And then the best part is he started out with like four more birdies. So he went on 16 birdies in a row through two rounds. And then he went 32 between. So he went from hole 17, round two, to hole 14, final round, without a bogey. So he went 32 straight holes without a bogey.
I'm looking at that. Wow. Yeah, this course just really suits him.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
first in circle two in regulation, sixth in birdies, sixth in OB rate. So, yeah, kept him in the
a couple of big putts. Really, I think what killed him late was the putter kind of cooled off. Like you see a lot of two putts in the final round, and one of them when it like rolled back behind the basket was just that kind of put him out of contention. But man, he's one of those guys. I was talking to Zoe Andyke, who was caddying for him, and she's like, he's like me. He's like I am in my division, where we have all the skills. We just need everything. We need to put everything together at the same time, you know?
Yeah, that's the hardest. That's just consistency. Yeah.
Yep. But he did that, and that was a nice performance to see out of him.
Agree.
What else, Sarah? Anyone else really stand out to you?
I, of course, chose Evelina Solonen to win, and she ended pretty well, sixth place. She was only seven out of first. I mean, it's not like she got rolled or anything.
No, but she had a rough go the final round, though. A lot of OBs the final round.
Yeah. Let's see.
Seven OBs the final round.
Yep, that was it. Dang.
And that was she was struggling, and you could tell she was getting real upset. It was kind of a bummer to watch.
Well, round two, I was watching her round two, and it was like birdie, bogey, double bogey, just roller coaster round. So who knows what's at work there? I would love to get her on the show at some point.
We might need a translator.
Oh, okay.
She speaks some English, but I know she's not super comfortable with it. Like I wouldn't expect she.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, look, you take the end of the course out for her, which kind of you can't because there's two rounds there. But she had, you know, she really struggled with her accuracy there. 12 OBs between the two rounds there.
That's not what you want.
No, I mean, not at all. Jennifer Allen, also really strong performance. We do need to talk about Paige Pierce a little bit, I think.
We had high hopes.
I always have high hopes for Paige Pierce. I got high hopes for Paige Pierce this week too. We'll talk about that in our picks, which we're recording during the Memorial, but we were good and we logged our picks early.
Should we share the link to our points leaderboard?
Oh, maybe. Maybe we should pretty it up or something before we do that.
I mean, it's not pretty.
I know, but I could maybe like embed it on the, I could maybe like put it on the PDGA side or something.
I like that. Throw a logo.
Yeah, we'll do
something.
Yeah,
we have an official, leaderboard this time instead of us just trying to add giant numbers up.
Instead of mathing.
And then, and then remembering them later.
Yeah. Good job, Sarah.
So all I know is that I won. That's all that matters. So Paige did a Instagram live after her rounds, and she was just like, you know, this was my first round, my first competitive round of the year, and that was probably a bad choice. Like, I probably should have done some warm-up events before this just to get into a competitive headspace. And
yeah, I mean,
like,
last year she did Thailand. The year before that, I think she'd played like three tournaments.
Yeah.
Before Vegas.
I know. I'd love to see. Actually, I saw her a few times in the off season. She's been through Nashville. But I didn't ask her like what her practice regimen is or anything like that. But
right.
I don't know. Maybe next time we talk to her, we can.
Not to throw Paige under the bus here, but like I saw her one morning at Starbucks, like 15, 20 minutes before her tea time. And like that, granted, early, super early tea times. At that point, she was playing even earlier, I think, than she anticipated she would be.
Yeah.
But like, so clearly not in the full tournament groove yet. But the great part is, though, she's such an awesome sport. Like, she was still running around the rest of the day smiling and like helping Alyssa with photography and media stuff.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if some of that
you wouldn't have known that she was struggling.
Yeah. I wonder if some of that is taking a toll on her, competitive edge. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It could just be, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's maybe taking her competitive edge, but maybe she's just more interested in doing some of that stuff sometimes, you know? And I mean, look, she's won four world championships. Like, we say the same thing about Paul McBeth. Like, at some, like, he won four world championships, and then, you know, at some point, like, there's, you got to figure out a way to really motivate yourself after you've won so much. And I think maybe that's, you know, that could be what's going on. But I think a lot of it is just early season issues. If we look at the Memorial leaderboard right now, she's only one shot out of contention.
Oh yeah. So it's super tight at the top.
She's coming into it. I think she'll be okay. Let's take a look at the hot rounds and then let's go Memorial. Does that sound good, Sarah?
Yeah.
Do we have any more? I mean, we could probably talk about Vegas all day, but there's.
Oh, plenty. There's a couple. Well, there's a couple things that I want to talk about. So, I loved your new PDGA radio chain reaction.
Oh, thank recap. You. Thank you. Thank you.
That was really cool. It was good. So it was raining a lot here the whole time that all the coverage was coming out. And so I would watch one of the, you know, front nine or whatever. And then right after I'd be like, all right, now I'm going to do some things around the house. And then like the back nine would come out and I'm like, all right, I'll do that. And then the men's would come out. So I was pretty much on the couch.
You honestly might have seen more of those players than I did. The whole tournament, I would say, was chaos. I was the first 3 days and even the final day, I was just running around from card to card to card trying to see who was doing what. There was no,
I bet.
There was no cohesion to the action, and that was probably the hardest part.
Yeah, well, I really like that. I wanted to give a shout out to you for the chain reaction. I think that's a really good idea, and it's very useful. And then also, if you watched the Jomez videos, there's a couple new functions at the bottom or features, mm-hmm. and one of which was a score. Did you watch any of it? There's a scorecard.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a scorecard at the bottom, and I like the idea of it. But I was watching. I don't know what size our TV is. Like, I want to say 50 inch. I don't know, but I couldn't. It was hard for me to see what all of the symbols were, and I think it would have helped maybe if, like Germ and Nate said, "Hey, there's new features. This is what this means. The red means."
They didn't get. I didn't get to watch enough of it, so they didn't really give like a walkthrough or anything like that.
I don't know. None of the stuff that I watched, they did. Okay. But I mean, after watching it a few, you're like, okay, that was a birdie.
You get it. You figure it out.
Green or whatever
they were hoping it to be. Yeah.
I like the idea of it. That was the point. It's cool that they're continuing to add features and.
Yeah. I mean, they
try to elevate their game. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they always do that. They had a whole huge crew out there. They were doing both cards every day. You know, and they hustle. They hustle, man. All the media teams out there hustle. And like, I cheated on you the other night and went on Smashbox because we were doing this beforehand. Whatever.
You didn't tell me that.
you were out with your, you were doing work stuff. No, but I went on Smashbox basically to just like awesome. Say thank you to the media teams who were there. So I should do that again on our own show. But
yeah,
thank you to everybody who was there between Jomez, Central Coast, Terry Miller, Gatekeeper Media, and then obviously Alyssa, who was running around all day. Go and check out our Flickr page. It's flickr.com/photos/PDGA. That's where she's going to be uploading stuff. And she got so many great shots, and Paige was helping her. And then last but certainly not least, Corey Murrow was just crushing our video recaps.
Yeah.
Those were super good. And we couldn't do those without the shot by shot guys, you know, sharing their footage with us so we could do that. Yeah. But we're just trying to get a different, you know, a different feel, a different kind of hit at the market there. And I was super pleased with those. And, you know, we put out like a top 10 video and stuff, and it's just, you know, we're trying to do some more fun stuff that maybe you don't get at other events on the national tour. So thank you all of our media people.
When is the Gatekeeper footage coming out?
It's supposed to come out this week. I need to get a hold of them and see what they're, I know, you know, it's kind of hard because like, you don't want to necessarily like step on the memorial too, but I know their plan is supposed to be soon. Cool. So hopefully it will come out. And same with Terry. I know Terry, I think, was having some technical issues.
Yeah, he couldn't get something to upload. He couldn't get his footage to render or upload to YouTube or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So hopefully the Gatekeeper guys will be coming out pretty soon. Because they do great work. And look, the coolest part was like, this whole thing was very satisfying for me personally, because I'd spent a lot of time this off season working on our new media policies, with the main goal being to get more teams there without sponsors worrying about who was sponsoring who and conflicts and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, to be able to get there and have five cards covered and then have those guys actually shooting like stuff that mattered, like Gatekeeper caught Eagle McMahon's 15 under round, the final round. They caught James Conrad on the almost hitting the basket, or actually hitting the basket, almost AC. Yeah. They got, you know, Terry Miller got Jessica Weiss's huge throw in.
Yeah.
And even last year. So last year we only had Jomez on MPO 1, FPO 1. So we didn't have an MPO Chase. This year, MPO Chase Central Coast got Andrew Presnell's ace. So, I mean, like, we don't have all that coverage there. We miss a lot of stuff. So I was just, and obviously then on top of that, we had Jomez doing like elevating their game and doing what they do so well. Yeah. And so it was very satisfying to have all that come together. And I hope that we can keep it going for the rest of the year. So
can I give one more unrelated shout out?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I did this last week. I'm having like a senior moment right now, but have you watched any of the videos that Tyler Brickley is doing commentary on?
No, I know you were messaging me about them.
Okay.
Did you find out, does he for real have an accent, or does he just make that up?
I don't want to give it away.
Oh, boo. It's fake, right? It's gotta be fake. He sounds like Murray from Flight of the Conchords. He can't be that good.
Oh, I love that show.
Are you getting it? He sounds like Murray. Doesn't he sound like Murray a little bit?
Yeah. You should talk to him and find out yourself.
I'll talk to him.
But we're besties now, because I hunted him down on Facebook and I was like, dude, I love what you do. So basically, if you don't know about this dude, he does commentary, I'm assuming, over Jomez.
Central Coast
video. Okay. And it is some of the most hilarious stuff I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
One of which that recently came out was the Samui Swine event, and he and another guy, instead of counting birdies or whatever, they were counting they were counting OBs, and not OBs as in out of bounds, OBs as in outbursts. And so every time a player had like an outburst, and it was like tiny stuff, like a clap or like a I don't know, whatever players do or yeah, say yeah, something yeah. under their breath, there'd be like a little like ding sound, and they're adding up the outburst at the end of every hole. And the person that you would, the person that you would think would have the most outbursts by the end of the round actually won and didn't have very many outbursts at all. I don't want to ruin it.
Oh man.
But it was, it's hilarious. Tyler Brickley, look him up on YouTube. I told him I'd give him a shout out on the show. So
cool.
I'm a big
good
fan.
Good deal.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, time for the rounds that were hot. And I think, let me see here. Were all the FPO ones at Vegas? I'm sure all the
all
FPO
was
ones
FPO.
Vegas.
Yes,
I was pretty
one...
pumped to see that on the MPO side they were not all from Vegas. That makes
just
me happy.
One, just one.
Still
count it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But why don't you start with the FPO?
All right, I shall start. Okay, so the fifth hottest rated score was Paige Pierce and Evelina Solonen, and they shot a 987. Oh, where are we?
That would have been
Paige
what?
Pierce. Their
Paige,
third round.
Final round. Third round? Okay. Third round.
Yeah. Well, that was third round,
Okay.
They shot 57s at the Factory Store course.
Okay.
So yes. Man. That being our fifth hottest rated round is pretty ridiculous.
There were some very hot rounds. The women's yes. field is getting so good.
I know. Tell me about it. Okay, the fourth hottest rated score was Sarah Hokum, and she shot a 992 her first round, and that was on the Infinite course. So congratulations. Man, so close to 1,000. Maybe it'll bump up to 1,000 in the official ratings. Who knows?
I think it started over 1,000, and then it dropped down. I was bummed about that.
Yeah.
Given that happens. You know that happens, right?
I know. I was going to say, I have one experience with that. Mm-hmm. It's okay. All right. The next hottest rated round was Katrina Allen and Jessica Weiss both shot 994 during their second round at the end of a course. So congratulations on that. We already mentioned this one, but Vanessa Van Dyken shot a 1,001, and that was during her final round at the end of a course as well, correct?
Right.
Yes, yep. End of a course. Yep. And even hotter than that, if you can believe it, was Jennifer Allen. And she shot a 1,005 during round three at the Factory Store course. So yeah. Really cool to see her back back up on the leaderboard and playing so well early in the season.
Yeah, she's doing great. She's so interesting fact, because I looked this up. Jennifer Allen is at 2,000 or better rated rounds in the past like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And for her whole career before that, she'd only had two.
Wow.
Yeah. So she has four total rounds over 1,000 in her career, and two of those have come in the last 6 months.
Not to take away from, this is not a reflection on her specifically, but I wonder if there's got to be rating inflation. Like Sean talks about this all the time, that he thinks that scores back in the day are comparable to what they were today, but the ratings are much higher today.
Interesting. I don't know. It could be that there's more just top quality players too. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't claim to know anything about.
I don't either. I don't.
The ratings
the
equation
ratings
though.
Are a big secret system that I don't understand. But
yeah.
Very nice rounds there. Let's talk about on the MPO side. We had a pair of 1078s. And those came from Anthony Barella and Austin Hannum. And those are both during round one, I believe. Anthony's definitely was. Where's Austin? Oh, no. Austin Hannum's was during round two. I'm sorry. So Anthony Barella ended up in 15th place, as did Austin Hannum. They just both took different routes to get there.
Yeah, I was going to say that's kind of a story as well, that Anthony Barella started in first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he came out firing, but I think we still have some, I think he still has some youth to work out of his system there in that regard, you know. Dustin Keegan's 1084 during round three at the Factory Store course was the fourth hottest rated round. Nate Sexton shooting a 1085. I believe that was his second round. Let me double check on that one. 1085 rated second round over at the end of a course. And he came in a 10th place tie. That's another story we haven't even talked about. Nate Sexton playing like 80% with his forehand. And
still doing pretty solid and barely even practicing before the season because he's in like super dad mode. So pretty solid start for him.
Yeah.
Calvin Heimberg also shot 1085. That was during round two, also at the end of a course. And we know that Calvin won. Eagle McMahon's 1088 during the final round was the second hottest rated round, and he came in second place. And the hottest round of the weekend came from Mr. Michael Johansson, all the way over in North Carolina, in Mooresville, North Carolina, at the Spikeheiser's Stumpy's Fling and Ching. And MJ shot a 1090 rated second round. Woo. He won that tournament. So get this, 3-round tournament. He averaged 1068.6
over three rounds. Dang. Wait, what is he rated? I'm not on the
1026.
Wow.
Yeah, he was on fuego this weekend. And I'm excited. He's going to be playing. He's going to be playing a lot.
24 strokes. Dang. Yeah.
Good job, MJ. I'm excited. Hey, he's going to be coming out to the West Coast a bit more this year. Like he's gonna play a little bit more. So
yeah, I'm stoked about that. He and Holly are going to be touring together again.
Yep. That should be cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
All right. So without further ado, we got to talk about the Memorial, Sarah. It is actually going on right now. You can follow along all weekend on the Disc Golf Pro Tour's YouTube channel. As the much ballyhooed internet has told you, I'm sure the Disc Golf Pro Tour is bringing most of their stuff in-house. But I saw some interesting things. So, like, I got to look into this a little more and see how they're working 100% other media, because Dynamic Discs is filming a card today and putting it out on their own YouTube channel.
Did not which, know that.
That's, I mean, I think it's great. It's more media. It's more coverage. I'm just surprised that a lot of times we can't get away with that kind of stuff because Dynamic Discs is not the title sponsor of the Memorial Championship. But there is a Discraft player on that card along with three Dynamic Disc players. But I think it's cool. I really hope that more of our title sponsors can start to be a little more open and understanding with that. So if this is the first step toward that, sign me up. But anyway, Disc Golf Pro Tour Memorial Championship, UDisc Live, Golf Pro Tour YouTube channel for post-production and live. Sarah, we're watching the live right now. It's on. This morning it was not so on. Apparently they had some technical difficulties during the women's coverage. I did see someone on the internet somewhere say that YouTube went down during that time, but I don't think that was the only reason why they were having issues.
I don't know about that.
We have Nate Doss and Val Jenkins on commentary. Earlier this morning they had kind of a blanket sheet in the background.
It's like an Egyptian cotton sheet.
People were like ragging on him about it big time.
It looked comfortable to sleep on.
It didn't look. I will be the first to admit it didn't look super professional. But now they're behind in front of some kind of solid structure for the MPO. So look, they're already taking feedback and making adjustments. Yeah. Johnny McRae looks like Santa Claus right now.
I was gonna comment. I kind of like the beard.
It's amazing. I love it. So let's do this. Sarah and I, you know where to go for the coverage. Sarah and I are watching it right now. We might do a little bit of commentary of our own. They're on hole 10. It looks like Eagle McMahon is at 8-under par right now. Are you like ahead of me? I'm hearing you go, ooh.
I just saw Johnny McRae throw a little Anheuser.
From a knee? Oh, I'm ahead of you. You better catch up. Hit that live button. Current stands on leaderboard, Sias Elmore is in with a 12-under par. Same with Alex Russell. I would love to see both of those guys on the lead card just to get some different players in the mix. Philo Brathwaite at 11 down. Steve Brinster and Kale Leviska, Patrick Brown, Seppo Paju, Kenny Clark. A lot of people. Holy cow. I ran out of room. A lot of people at 10-under par. So,
did you just see Macbeth hit the basket?
No, I didn't.
Are you still ahead of me? It's because you're looking on the West Coast.
It has nothing to do with it. I was looking at the scores. So anyway, I mean, look, good turnout so far. There are about 3,400 people watching, and I think people are hungry for their disc golf. If this is any indication, and if last weekend was any indication as well, so it's good to have the season started. Sarah and I need to make some picks. We did log our picks, like via chat yesterday, because we knew we were going to be recording during the event. So, Sarah, without further ado, Do you remember our picks?
They are in the spreadsheet because I'm trying to keep
them. I got them.
All right.
Who did you? Why don't you go with your pick for the MPO side or the FPO side? Sorry.
FPO side. Okay. I chose Katrina Allen to win. She had a really good showing at Vegas last weekend. I don't know what happened.
Simon just made a nice putt.
Yeah. Oh, from the sidewalk. She played really, really well last weekend. I took her for top five last weekend and I got my 1 point for her.
There you go.
So I think she'll learn from some of the mistakes and knocking the dust off a little bit from the off season. But yeah, she's going to win.
Current standings in our points total so far. I have 5 points. Sarah has two. We get 2 points if you correctly pick the winner of an event. 1 point if you get the correct top five choice. So I have Jessica Weiss from the Wintertime Open, and then that's either of us is only correct winner. I got a couple points for my top fives last week. Sarah got one. So that's where we are. I have faith in Paige Pierce that she is going to be in full competition mode this week. She's only one shot behind right now. I did pick her beforehand. So I'm going to take Paige Pierce for my FPO winner and my FPO top five. I'm going to take Sarah Hogan. I think she started out strong last weekend. She really faltered in the wind. I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, new sponsor, new discs, not quite as much experience with how they will perform in those kind of conditions. I don't know that we're going to get that kind of level of wind in Phoenix, but I expect Sarah Hokum to show some veteran kind of recovery skills this week. So I'm going to take her for top five.
Cool. I like it. I'm going to take Jennifer Allen. I think she's playing really strong so far this year and she lives in Arizona and plays these courses.
She's playing in Arizona this year.
Yeah. She plays these courses all the time. And I think, who knows? I'm just speculating about this, but she'll be back in weather that is familiar to her, not snow. So hopefully she'll have more of a home course advantage and play really well again this weekend.
Yeah, that's a good one. Who you got for? All right, who's let's work backwards in MPO. Let's mix it up. Who's going to be your MPO top five?
I'm going to take Macbeth for top five because he's Macbeth.
Because he's Macbeth. Okay.
Enough
said. I'm gonna take Ricky Wysocki for top five because I'm not sure if I think he's gonna get the monkey off his back yet. He still hasn't won the Memorial. It's been one of those like bugaboos for him. But man, that dude is throwing frisbees really, really flipping far right now. And doesn't come quite as handy at Fountain. It'll come in handy at Vista. But gosh, like I have never seen Ricky throw that far and he already threw very far. So he's a seven down right now through 12 or 13 putting for circle one. So he's right in the mix.
So is Macbeth. Yeah.
So is Macbeth. They all are. Yeah. Macbeth's on live coverage right now. And then for my winner, this one might not seem as, this isn't quite a chalk pick, but after seeing how he played last week and having our nice chats at Starbucks, I'm getting on the Kale Aviska train this week. By the way,
did he buy you a coffee?
No, he didn't buy me coffee. He didn't buy me coffee. But we are car buddies now. So we got the same.
What does that mean?
So
oh, cool. You've got a Tesla's, yeah.
Yeah, he rolled his Tesla all the way out from Minnesota.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I was like, how did you do that? Did it take you forever? He's like, no, it was fine. I was like, I guess I just think about like having a kid and driving and how long it would take. And you know,
I don't know what that's
so
like.
it's trust me, it's an exercise in patience. But anyway, digressing here. My MPO pick for the win is Kale Leviska, and Kale right now is in at 10 under par for the day. Sarah, who's your winner?
I'm gonna go Eagle. I feel like he's pretty disappointed in his performance from last weekend, and he's just been really impressive to me with how young he is, but how mature he is,
right.
And how he can he showed last year how well he can hold his head together even when he's not doing really well, and then jump back the next event. So yeah, I think he's going to do pretty well. He's 8 down through 11 at the moment.
Ah, he started out with 8 straight birdies and now has gone par. So we'll see. I mean, this is one of those courses like Fountain Hills is just like birdie fest. Like if you're getting bogeys there, it's not great. Right?
Doesn't feel
like,
good. Yeah.
I'm looking at these scorecards and like there's not a lot of orange on them. So
nope.
Well, we'll see.
Have you seen him make his putt on 11 yet? Are you that far ahead of me?
I'm about to. So you just spoiler alerted it for me.
No, I don't know. He's lining
he's
it
putting.
Up.
He's putting.
Oh,
and
it just rose.
Off the top.
No!
No.
Did it
off
roll?
The cookie plate.
Is it rolling?
No, it's
I think
good.
It's at.
He's
ooh,
like
okay,
10
it's
feet.
At.
He's like 10
that's
feet.
A tough.
See, we need
have
to get.
You, have you played
we
got to
get
course?
Me and Sarah. No, I haven't. But me and Sarah got to get on this live commentary because I think we would bring the fire a little bit. Like, no knock on Nate and Val, but they're pretty low key.
Yeah.
We need a little more, like...
I make a lot of noises.
We need that, though, like, because really, here's what's missing out of disc golf commentary is, like, that high energy, like, emotion that you can build into, like, highlight reel stuff. Like, you think about really good football plays or baseball plays and stuff, and, like, there's always some comment... Or soccer. There's always some commentator going crazy. Oh, Macbeth just hit off the bottom band and rolled.
I have played this course, and it's... I mean, obviously, I don't play to the level of Eagle and Macbeth, but... There's some tough putts here. Like Simon, they're
Simon's going to take the lead on the card. Boom.
Hopefully.
I'm
he's
telling you, when Simon
putt,
gets when Simon gets dialed awful. With the putter, he's pretty unstoppable.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a fair amount of people out there watching for a Thursday afternoon, too.
Thursday. Yeah, I like that they moved it to Thursday instead of Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think that's a nice improvement for the tournament staff to make. Oh, and look, I would say that the Pro Tour has changed their production style a little bit. We're watching right now; they went picture in picture commercial while Johnny McRae tapped out, and this is on the live coverage, not just in the post. You know, so that's a really nice improvement.
They've also changed their elevated basket design.
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
I didn't have any thoughts really. I was like, oh, okay, neutral. And then I started seeing stuff about putters getting some nicks from hitting the corners.
Oh, really?
Wait, is it a square or is it a triangle?
It's like a pyramid, but without the triangle on top. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it now. It's like a trapezoidal prism or something.
Okay.
I don't know what you would call it.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not round. It's not a cylinder like it was.
It has edges.
Before it's got edges, and I've heard that people are hitting their putters and it's taking chunks out.
I'm curious as to why they changed that. My bet is that maybe this is easier to transport because it looks like it might fold up.
Oh, maybe. I was thinking maybe printing was easier.
That too. I mean, you can put
it.
It's got four flat sides. They've got the Pro Tour stuff and a partner logo on it.
Yeah. Who knows?
I think they look like a less fancy version of that like lighthouse hole in it's like somewhere in Wisconsin where they play the Silver Cup. Silver Lake or something like that.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of like
I can't visualize that.
You'd know it if you saw it. It's one of those kind of like iconic disc golf photos. It's a basket that looks like a lighthouse. I think it looks like that. I'm not a huge fan of them, but I wasn't a fan of the big tubes either. Like I would prefer a classier kind of, and that's not said. Yeah. I just called them not classy. I didn't really mean to do that, but I would prefer like a
what elevated basket
branding.
Is classic. I don't know.
That's the thing.
I guess I don't enjoy like elevated
fan.
Baskets in general.
No, like, I'm with you. Like I would prefer
like use
elevated
the terrain.
Exactly. Like if the shot doesn't call for it, I don't know that you necessarily have to make it like that. Like, and to me, like Vegas was really good example of that. They put their pins on mounds and on hillsides, and that's kind of how you elevate your basket, and there's landing zones and spots to deal with. But like
I really
here,
liked how they did that. Yeah.
Here it's like you miss it and it's just flat and you're waving back and forth at it unless you hit that big old thing.
Yeah. I heard that it does make the same
thunk
sound. So that'll be entertaining at least.
Yeah. I will also say that the Pro Tour's live coverage has integrated nice drone flyover previews.
Yeah.
And like maps. I think that looks good. The quality of the cameras and film work looks to be fairly comparable to me from last year, unless I'm seeing something different. I think really the biggest thing, if we're being honest, the biggest thing for the Pro Tour is going to be their post-production, because
yeah,
they are going to have the scrutiny of not having Jomez and Central Coast Disc Golf. And if they could put out something that's like 75 to 80% quality of those things, people are going to watch it and it's going to be fine. If they put out stuff that's like 50%, then probably not. Oh, hey, look, I just got a message from Ian Anderson right now. It looks like Andrew Presnell actually did make the Sports Center top 10.
Awesome.
With his ace.
Skip ace, right?
Yep, that was a fun shot.
That was skip ace, and then it kind of
hit off the band up top too. So it was like,
oh yeah, and then like filtered
it
in.
Skipped, hit the band and dropped in. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. The other thing that's happening right now is we're watching some of the, I know we've said that we're seeing some of the Chase card, but they're superimposing the Chase card coverage into this too. So we're getting to see a little bit.
Yeah. What they've done is kind of recorded it and gone back and forth, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. We will obviously have more on this next week. As Simon Lizotte is about to hit like a 18 footer.
Yeah.
18 footer. He's at, did he just go to 10 down?
I believe so. Is he at 10 or 9?
He's at 10. He's at 10. They like put in a little delay on screen so that people don't get upset.
Gotcha.
So he's already up into fourth place. Simon's probably going to end up with the hot round.
I don't know. I think McMahon's going to end up with the hot round.
We slept on Simon for this one. He's the defending champ.
We only have 4 choices.
I know. That's fine. Could
I make another note real fast? This is the first in the year that we have been doing this. This is the first time we have ever seen each other while recording.
I will also say, Sarah, do you know this is episode number 50?
Oh, I actually noticed that last week and was going to send you a note about that. And then
we should have done that in the intro, but yay, that's okay. It felt more organic now. So happy 50th and
happy 50th.
Digital high five. 50 more. Yeah, boop. Digital high five. Yeah, Sarah and I can see each other in video now with our new recording program. It's pretty cool.
I have gotten feedback over the past year about us doing a video podcast. And up until now, I was like, nah. Like, do we really need to see my face?
We need to get some nice backgrounds and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not in the best room.
We'd have to make it like a studio look.
I have a nice curtain behind me.
Yeah, but we need like a PDGA curtain behind you.
That's true. We can make it happen.
We need a green screen so we can make it look like we're at the different
we're on the
courses
course
each week.
I'm just saying I'm not opposed. Now that we've done it this way, as long as I'm allowed to drink my coffee and look like an idiot on camera, then I'm like totally fine with it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it'd be good. I like it. I think we should. Maybe we'll consider giving it a shot. But thank you to everybody who's listened to us for 50 episodes. My goodness. It's been a lot of fun and we appreciate that everyone tunes in. And Sarah, thank you for putting up with me for 50 episodes.
Thanks for putting up with my silly face.
No, it's fun. Well, this is the first time I've done the silly face.
I know.
Good. I'm glad you mentioned that on air that we can actually see each other now, because there's a part in the Calvin interview where he mentions, he's like, you can see me, but da 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 da. And I was like, oh, how was I going to explain that? So
wait, can I explain what you're wearing right now? You're wearing a pizza. It's a shirt with a pizza box and a very fat cat eating a piece of pizza.
That's Pusheen. That's my daughter's like favorite stuffed animal.
Oh, okay. That's very cute.
She's a big deal in this house. And actually you'll know, like I have her on my little backpack, my backpack that I'm always wearing. And like Jordan Castro has a Pusheen on his bag.
Aww.
Grady Shu, also a big Pusheen fan. Yeah,
very cute.
It's a thing.
I got this fancy new shirt from my company this week, and it just so happens to be a polo dry fit, the same brand of all the other dry fits that I wear for disc golf. So I was like, do you guys care if I put Innova on the back and brand this up so I can play disc golf in it? And they're like, oh, do whatever you want. So
perfect
sporting it for the day. Yeah,
good. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you again for tuning in. You can subscribe and share and let your friends know that we are doing our thing. And we'll be back with more next week from wrapping up the Memorial. Most likely with my winning pick, Kayla Visca, is what I'm thinking.
We'll see about that.
Or maybe your pick, Eli McPan.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, probably. Until then, that was Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. Thanks for listening to this episode of PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we will talk to you next week.